When I first moved here, I thought, oh, perhaps I need to be teaching on more on the biological side. But what I found was so many things that relate and are all interconnected with who we are as a community and how our natural world functions. And so I took on, and I thought, okay, maybe if I can lift people's experience of who they are and their sense of well-being, then that's another way to have people look after the planet. While somebody feels honoured and respected, they tend to not go trash other things. And so it's a big job. We have a big job. We've got, there are multiple generations of people who still have lost connection with not only nature, but with their whakapapa and feel quite isolated. And in those situations, there's a whole lot of things that happen where people perhaps take action where that has damaging consequences. And I'm not just talking, this is across the board, this is anyone who's actually got the experience of needing to somehow regain power in some way and misdirectedly will take it out on something else. So with our domestic violence, but also with our clearing of forests and with not considering the earth when they're actually taking from the earth and not giving back. There is this whole thing of if you feel connected to something bigger than yourself and you have a purpose and you can aspire to something and that brings you forth into the future, then life is kind of cool, yeah. You know. So despondency, all those kinds of things, they're hard to live with. But inside of community, where the community is alive and well and thriving, then those things show up. You're part of something bigger than yourself.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Whangarei, I have Fiona Douglas. She's a scientist, teacher, community leader, artist, and passionate activist for arts in the environment. So, kia ora, Fiona.
Kia ora, Tim. Thanks very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. You were born in Australia, yes?
Yeah, that's right. I was born in Adelaide, in the foothills of Adelaide, near the Green Hill. Spent the first 21 years of my life growing up there and exploring the hills and the bush, and really I think that's where a lot of what I have taken on has come from, where I had the time to observe the planet, really, when I was a youngster. My brothers and sisters were a bit older than me, and so I had more time. They were off doing their grown-up things, and I just wandered around the bush.
Okay, and once you got your credentials at university, you worked as an agronomist, and you lectured in biology, botany, and environmental science as well. So as a educator on science and nature, so this has extended itself for you to be able to talk about the web of life.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a journey. Like, and looking at what are the motivators for people to actually connect with things that are important and are really have a deep and very special meaning to us as human beings. And so most lately I've been doing it through music and that kind of thing. But in the beginning it was really looking at what are the things that are connected, what things are interconnected, and how can I share that with people so that they get lit up, really, and see how extraordinary it is in the place that we live.
Yes, well, when you say lit up, I mean, the oxygen we breathe, it's astounding. So many people, particularly when they get so busy in life, forget where their breath comes from, and the plankton and the vegetation on our planet is part of a magnificent cycle that we're breathing in, all of us, all 7.7 billion of us are breathing in this invisible breath or oxygen. And so that is just another wonderful thing that ties us all in, doesn't it?
For sure. We are completely connected. There is absolutely nothing that we're not connected with, if you know what I mean. The first time anybody ever introduced me to the fact that I could be breathing in a molecule of something that perhaps came from Cleopatra's sweat or something like that, I'm like, oh my God, that just totally blows me away. it's an exciting thing to know that not only in the present, but it brings us through from the past as well, and the connection from past, present, future. And that's extraordinary, and it's something we mustn't trash.
Yes, for sure. You know, being in Australia, the whole environment there is very, very different to over here in New Zealand. We've had a lot of rain recently, and of course there's problems in Australia with bushfires, etc. So you understand the critical balance of life and the fact that we need our soil, we need to have sort of a mulch soil if we can, if the leaves of trees can fall down and eventually break down until we've got plenty of humus. I just want to cover a small thing there, that you lectured in biology and botany, and so there is just this, all these organisms, the biota of our planet, and each one of them has got a, shall we say, a barometer inside them that keeps them at a certain warmth, well, particularly the mammals. And so everything is critical, from the fact that our whole biosphere too protects us from the coldness of space. We are in a very critical and balanced situation, are we not?
Yes. Short answer, yes. Yes, it's rather scary, really. Like a lot of the work that I've done in looking at ecosystems and certainly around the soil biota, we know that diversity is really important to keep us safe and strong and connected. And when we're taking out these big chunks of our ecosystems by broad spectrum spraying or planting only one species or really just not considering what we're doing, we're taking a big area of life that's required out of the system. And when we lose a large chunk of the system, trying to regain ground is really, really tricky. I don't have the answers for this, but what I know is that if we can minimise that, we at least have our scaffolding system in place where we can build on and build on to come back to a more even or harmonious ecosystem where diversity is encouraged and it's easier to thrive inside of that sort of space.
I hear you. It's like the times that I've been over, say, in Sydney and even Melbourne, such a vast, vast area with all this pavement everywhere that these cities are heat islands and they really, really heat up. And yet when you can get away into the bush and under the canopy, then the coolness comes in. And so you really appreciate the fact that we have to have nature close to us, especially in the cities.
Yes, for sure. Yep. Nature in the city is something that I think we give lip service to. There are people who are very well trained in these areas, but are our authorities actually taking notice and, in fact, having them be integral part of their planning right at the very beginning? Urban planning is, like, I've been part of an organisation called Child Friendly Cities in Whangarei, and if you can design a city for children, which means it's safe and there is places to play and they get to experience nature and all those kinds of things, then that city will be healthy for everybody. And so when we're looking at urban design, in New Zealand, we've really got to pick up our act.
Yes.
It's sort of like this urban sprawl, and you know, people go, oh my gosh, it's growing so fast, and it's like, well, we need to have things in place such that we do not make the mistakes that obliterate these things that are really important for all living species, including taking up the good land that's arable for growing things, including having people living in spaces where they should never be, in swamps and in areas like that. We haven't got a good history with that in New Zealand, where people were relegated to the swamps and people who had power ended up going up the hills because that was a healthier place to be. And you kind of go, oh, you know, we really have a bad history with that. We've got to bring mindfulness when we're doing planning.
Yes, well, the rivers or creeks that come out of the hills and finally go to the sea and they wind through the cities. I mean, underneath Queen Street, the main street in Auckland here, is a stream, and it's called the Horatu Stream, but it's all been covered over and nobody ever knew about it until very, very recently. Historians stated that, well, way back, you know, 150-odd years ago, there was a stream underneath the main street. So these are the arteries of the greater body of our planet. And so again, Yeah, what you're saying is very important, that we have to make sure that our children know that once upon a time, many cities were very vibrant with bird sound and the like. So, Fiona, you've moved over here to New Zealand. You've moved into the North Whangarei, which is a lovely little town.
Yeah.
And it's got so much going for it. What is your main focus here in Whangarei?
Okay, so well, I've lived here now for 21 years, which feels like I've come of age. And in fact, I've actually just applied for citizenship, which is wonderful.
Okay.
So I just think after 21 years of being supported and fed by this environment that it's now time for me to show my support. And so I've had various things that I have focused on. And some of them have been teaching, some of them have been inside the agricultural sector, like for around avocados, and others have been in community development. When I first moved here, I thought, oh, perhaps I need to be teaching on more on the biological side, but what I found was so many things that relate and are all interconnected with who we are as a community and how our natural world functions. And so I took on and I thought, well, okay, maybe if I can lift people's experience of who they are and their sense of well-being, then that's another way to have people look after the planet. While somebody feels honoured and respected, they tend to not go trash other things. And so it's a big job. We have a big job. We've got, there are multiple generations of people who still have lost connection with not only nature, but with their whakapapa and feel quite isolated. And in those situations, there's a whole lot of things that happen where people perhaps take action where that has damaging consequences. And I'm not just talking, this is across the board, this is anyone who's actually got the experience of needing to somehow regain power in some way and misdirectedly will take it out on something else. So with our domestic violence, but also with our clearing of forests and with not considering the earth when they're actually taking from the earth and not giving back.
Very much so. It's like you mentioned whakapapa, and for people who are outside New Zealand, whakapapa in many ways means your family lineage, your mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, all the way back through their so-called family lineage or tribe. And this is it. This is one of the things that many kiddies today, I've seen many people, particularly in the city, and you'll find that they are so disconnected even from the city, and they're just, this is why they had some years, it's quietened down with spray cans and putting graffiti up everywhere. It was a pushback by all the young that they felt they're so dissociated with everything. And so what you're doing is you're sort of pulling the strings together where people can find some sort of harmony among other groups of people to ease their life a little bit more, to recognise that people actually care for them.
Yeah, yeah. There is this whole thing of if you feel connected to something bigger than yourself and you have a purpose and you can aspire to something and that brings you forth into the future, then life is kind of cool,
yeah.
You know. So despondency, all those kinds of things, they're hard to live with, but inside of community where the community is alive and well and thriving, then those things show up. You're part of something bigger than yourself. There's always something going on, so that your future is kind of, there's always a future for you to live into. And that's one of the things that we did when we set up our Sistema program here. We have a community development program called Sistema Whangarei, Toi Akorangi, and it's about children who may not have the opportunities join in with an orchestral program, and they're learning their instruments while on the job, if you know what I mean. So it's where they get to have aspirations show up, because with music there's always somewhere to get to next. You've always got the next skill or the next bit of music or whatever, and then you're part of something bigger than yourself and your sound resonates with others. There's a whole world of community connection inside of that, and well-being, both on the individual and the group scale. There's just so much to that. And the more I look into it, the more I go, oh my gosh, that's why we're doing that. We didn't know why we were doing that, but now I can see why that works. And it's mirrored in how nature does things. We've got scaffolding, we've got how important that is that you have your small microorganisms present such that anything that's a little bit more complex has something to be able to work with and build on and then grow and grow, and then we come back to diversity. So you're talking about water before in Auckland, and water is so important in so many ways to our well-being. And when it's not well, it has massive consequences for the planet. And we are a place of lots of water, especially in Northland here where we have very high rainfall. And trying to, I know that there are moves afoot, there's draft policy out there around fresh water and those kinds of things. We need to be taking action, looking at those policies and going, hey, hang on, I think we need more than this. This is only just touching. This is like being nice to everybody, but we've actually got to make policy that really does bring us back to having healthy streams, which is to do with healthy soil and healthy forests. And we could go into the science of all of those things to do with temperature gradients and what gets absorbed into the water, because the rain is colder than the soil, it will run off. And it's a fascinating whole process that you've been reading about Victor Schellberger, an Austrian who wrote a lot of amazing things about water. And I think we really need to be looking at that and seeing how we can apply that in our areas, yeah.
Yes, well, Callum Coates, who is an Australian from the Sunshine Coast, he wrote the book Living Energies on Victor Schellberger, and every engineer, every developer actually need to actually have an understanding of what Schellberger was all about, because he is known as the father of water. So thank you for bringing his name up. Yes, and so when you go and start with these children and take them into music, it was really interesting from the standpoint of the missionaries when they came into the Pacific Ocean and met Pacific peoples. Singing was one of the things that on Sundays everybody got in, singing of hymns. It was the harmonies and the fact they chose words that glorified the greater, etc. But when people sing together, they let their heart out. And so this is, I think, a very important thing. And what you're doing as well, it's like the glue that keeps the group and the community together.
Yeah, yeah. I've learnt a lot around Māori tikanga as well, while being here. Been very, very privileged to participate in a diploma of toi pai matua with whakairo, so in carving. And there's a lot in that around whakapapa, nature, like all sorts of things that have totally opened up my world to understanding these things that I've observed and looking at how across the world we have indigenous cultures that are earth-based cultures and how important they are. We've got to be embracing and recognising and listening. And also around Te Reo Māori, what I've learnt while I've lived here is just how amazing the language is.
Yes.
And I think for New Zealand, for Aotearoa, in understanding or being familiar with Te Reo Māori, where so many things are linked to the earth, we can't avoid looking after the earth if so much of our language will be around that and related to that, and also around sound. So coming back to what you're saying about the singing, that Te Reo Māori is so much in it that is reflective of the oral environment when we look at patterns in sounds and reflectiveness and then multiples of things. So if people were to say to me, would I endorse teaching Te Reo Māori in schools? Absolutely. We can only all be better off for that, for having an awareness and actually challenging ourselves, if we're not already Māori speakers, Te Reo Māori speakers, then to actually challenge ourselves to come to a place where we are communicating in a way all together that we create amazing diversity in our language, in fact, such that it becomes something that it speaks the heart as well as function. English has been quite good as a functional language when you bring people together, but that's where it stops. What I've learnt about kaitiakitanga you talked about, and various words in Māori are about the beingness of something, and that gives us a much more diverse way of connecting with other people, with the planet, with all things.
Yes, well, you see, this is the other thing too. Māori intuitively know that Mother Earth actually exists, even though sciences, with teeth gritted and grinding away, don't want to acknowledge our planet as a superorganism. Māori just instantly know it. And this is where their connection really comes in, Their whakapapa helps them look back to this great living organism. And the fact that kaitiakitanga is a caring of this magnificence that surrounds us. And so, yes, you found yourself in a real good posse in whangarei.
Yeah, well, I live in one of the most beautiful places on the planet, but don't tell anyone. Don't we don't want too many people. It is what I noticed. We took our three teenagers around the world for a year, my husband Mark and I, in 2005. And that was about actually learning about the planet, peoples of the planet, and diversity. And I really wanted that as an education opportunity for my children to learn about other human beings such that they, around tolerance and acceptance, and so I can honestly say they're amazing human beings, my young people. So, well, they're in their 20s, when I just turned 30 recently, and it was an amazing journey. And we learnt about other people, we learnt about places, we learnt that coming back, what I distinguished when we arrived back in New Zealand is why we like to live here. And that was, I just got the growth. I stepped off the plane and I thought, oh my gosh, this place just grows. There's growth everywhere. And I meant that more in the natural world, you know, yes. I'm talking about sort of plants and so on. But there's a lot of places, like Australia, for example, these big continents where things have got to sort of a very old landscapes. And I feel that when you want to grow personally, like for me, I was quite keen to actually grow personally. And so New Zealand actually supports that for me. There's this growth that I can identify with in shifting old patterns, old family patterns, and transforming who I am in the world and support my family and moving into next generations.
Well, we're very lucky, I know. The greenery of New Zealand, a lot of people think, wow, look at it, grows right out along the roads. You can see just every spring too, then Mother Earth throws up her colour through all the flowers and you realise that, gee, it certainly is vibrant, whereas I know I've been in Europe and it's more, I don't know, more manicured, where here it's more wild, it's more just sprouts out at you. And this is our gift here in this country. The green, which affiliates with the heart chakra anyway, has us in a situation here where if we want to, it's a very, very fecund country in which to be able to facilitate growth, be it internal or external.
For sure. And I think we're the right size. You know, we've got the sort of size that of population where they talk about how many degrees of separation, and in New Zealand it's definitely less.
Yes.
Where there's, you know, we do know other people who know other people generally in this country. So there's a real strength to that.
You bet.
It's like when they talk about what an urban environment, what's the best population size, for example. At some point, somebody said around 55,000, which Whangarei has had up until recently. It started to grow. But they reckon that in that particular size of population, you will at least run into somebody you know downtown. And you will still, there's lots of people that don't know you, which is a good thing too, because sometimes you want anonymity, but other times you want to know you belong to something. So there's in urban planning, there's all these kinds of things that are really, really important to health and well-being. And we've got to come back to, okay, nurture ourselves, nurture the planet, and moving slower. You know, this is one of the things around the slow food movement.
Yes.
and those kinds of things. When we are moving slower, we get to hear things better, we get to see them better, we get to smell them better, as in it more fulfilling, and we get to connect. Those things are so important.
Mindfulness, this is very important, and I agree with you, and I know it's like Auckland, they're paying for 2.5 million. And who are they? This is a big problem. It's developers and big money people and planners who are in it for, I don't know, power or prestige or whatever. But in the smaller cities, I encourage you to keep your size relatively stable as possible. I like steady state as a word, because you have that sense of community, and you don't want to be... I think somebody in Napier talked about rush minutes, where we have rush hour, increasing now to rush 2 hours in Auckland. It was rush minute in Napier. And I was impressed to hear that sort of valuation of how they want to protect their town from growing too big. Now, can I ask a couple of things? You mentioned some interesting statements about kauri trees in New Zealand. We're putting fences around areas where to stop people going in and walking around kauri trees, which I feel at the moment, until we get a full understanding of this kauri dieback. You mentioned in an email to me, why do kauri have their heads in the ground? And and there's an old Maori statement around this, but I'd like to hear you.
Okay, well, I'm still forming my, you know, forming what I mean by that, and still in the state of becoming around this, but it struck me when I was up in the, went to a wānanga in the Waipoa forest, which is an incredible forest up north, and Te Rārua, I think, is the tribe, the iwi that's actually kaitiaki of the forest.
Now that's
they're amazing what they're doing. They're just forward-thinking, but also taking action around kauri. Like, it has to happen now, otherwise we may completely lose this amazing tree. It's linked so much to the creation myths,
yes,
around, or creation truths around Papatūānuku and the giant trees, and they're incredible, incredible. If you've never actually stood in front of Tāne Mahuta, then I totally encourage people to experience these giant trees and the, I don't know, the grandeur. Don't have a word for it because it's just so huge. But I also encourage people to actually find out about the kauri tree before they even go and see it, because it will just blow their minds. What I learnt was that kauri have their feet in the sky, reaching up to the sky, and their head is in the ground. Now, when I heard that, I'm like, oh my gosh.
What?
Exactly. It's like, I had never thought of it that way. But when I think of it, I think, oh, yeah, I really get that. We've got this intelligence, this innate intelligence in our earth, in our soils, and in the communication that goes on between trees that is essential for the health of our forests. And with all of that intelligence in the soil, we've really got to be looking after the health and well-being of our forests and our soil. It may not quite answer doesn't answer fully, but that was my take on it. And I also get that there's this, when you are reaching up to the sky with your legs, it's a very freeing, amazing thing to do. If you've ever sort of swum in a swim pool, if you can't do handstands, then swimming, you know, handstands in the water, and you reach your toes up to the sky and, you know, out of the water, you pop them out of the water, and it feels like, wow, that's just so cool. A very powerful thing to do. And just by taking on being empathetic with that, or like putting myself in that same place, I go, yeah, I really get this. Kauri have got their, you know, this is the way it is, and they're pushing the sky up. They're opening up what's possible for us. They're reaching up, and the sky's the limit, and part of kauri just, you know, like expanding our limits, expanding what's out there.
It's an interesting one. Whole Māori have come to this, and when you say you're out on the beach in the water and you stand on your head, so to speak, and you have your hands on the sand and your feet up top, well, it's the soles of our feet that are actually pointing to the sky, and particularly with these trees, these roots are like tendrils going up to starlight, and so it's a very interesting concept, and I like it very much. You also mentioned the paradox of sophistication, and I'd like you to talk about this, because I'm a simple person and I like simplicity, and we're getting so technically sophisticated that in many cases we have become disconnected from Mother Earth.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, really. We think that getting sophisticated or more complex is actually the answer to things. In fact, it's just really getting us further and further removed from what it was we wanted in the first place. I think there's a parable that goes, there's a fisherman by the water, and, you know, he's throwing his line and catching a fish every now and again, and then someone comes along and says to him, well, why don't you get a boat? You could catch so many more fish. And anyway, it goes that, of course, he could expand his technology, but then by the end of it, really all he wants to do is be by the water and fish, and not be getting further and further removed by getting technology and then more fish, which then gives him the capacity to sit by the water and fish, you know? Oh, it's a paradox. Yeah, it's just, and I think we find ourselves more and more in this situation where we're influenced by so many things that are coming from outside, and it's not necessarily what we want. We think that if to have this and to have this, we'll get what we need and or we'll be happy. But of course, if we be happy, then we can actually, then the other, the be, do and have. If we be happy and we do this and we can have that, where so much of what else we've been doing is if we have that, you know, we think that if we have this, then we can do this and then we can be happy. Like, it's a simple, very, very simple way of looking at life is just who are you being right now, you know? And we can shift that. One thing we ultimately have power over is who are we being? That wasn't actually what I was going to talk about with the paradox of of sophistication, but it fits in there. It fits in there. There's a lot of single-celled organisms out there that are so important to what we need, and we don't give them any regard whatsoever. Or we try and obliterate them. I mean, you know, like, for example, in hospitals where we disinfect everything and we've just killed off a whole biota of organisms. Now, of course, with germ theory, we decided that there were bad germs, but what happened is we became germist and we got rid of all germs, all things, all bacteria, and we end up with these whole areas of desert. And then, of course, then the things that are actually perhaps evolved to come in and be pioneer species, they come in. But we get these superbugs in the hospital, and us as humans, we take these things on and get very, very sick with them. I just always think that if we were to just at least consider the population of things that we can't see and consider that they are there anyway, and how would we approach this and how would we look after this if this was our family, then we wouldn't be in these situations of clear fell or wiping out whole populations of bugs, you know, that we need for our diversity.
Yes, yeah, well, I agree with you. It's like we have a situation here where we have 5G wireless being pushed on us. We also have GE and GMOs being pushed on us. It's not as if a community have invited them in saying, yes, we want this, we really want this. And as you say, the human biome, well, we're taking so much in the way of medications at the moment that such a huge percentage of our gut bacteria are being killed, and we need these gut bacteria because they are the ones who are actually going to break down the food and set free the goodness from this food to keep us alive. So this is the, as you say, the paradox of getting over-sophisticated without understanding the deep qualities of nature. I'm speaking with Fiona Douglas. She has experienced a lot as a scientist, looking at soil, looking at biology of nature, and she's also involved in children's education and our relationship with the web of life, with nature, with Mother Earth, with the frequencies and the sound and the ambience of the natural world.
Yes, and the deeper qualities are generally that we want to be connected, we want to be accepted, and we want to belong. And those are really where it comes down to. And then our fear responses to all of those things maybe not happening have us go in this other direction where we think we have to change things to make ourselves better or more like somebody else. When in fact, who we are is absolutely fabulous, you know? And everything in its own place is incredible and has its own integrity to it. This is what I think around the other thing around whakapapa is that there is an integrity to things that when we start to tell people about it, then they go, oh, yes, okay, so this is connected to something else. I had a moment where I was talking with the kids in the orchestra and I said, well, these violins and cellos that you're holding, where do they come from? And then we talked about the trees that they came from and we talked about the metal from the strings and where did that come from? You could actually hear a pin drop. These are 6 and 7 year olds. They totally got it. They totally got that everything comes from somewhere and is part of something and that they're actually very privileged to be part of that, but they also bring their own specialness to it, if that's a word. But, yeah.
Very much so. I know the Māori, before they cut down a tree, they will always have a prayer, a karakia, prior to cutting down their tree. And it's a very important selection process as to what tree it is. So there's this reverence for nature that the indigenous peoples have that we have lost. As you say, clear felling trees. It's just a business decision in a high-rise office somewhere on the other side of the planet that can cause this because a corporation wants to make a profit. So, yeah, there's all sorts of things that we have to take into consideration if we want to make sure that our children and tomorrow's children have a future for them.
I was thinking about that this morning, about how we get to this point, like with, say, for example, a mixed forest that's definitely not an old growth forest, but we go in and we go, oh, this is the start point. We think that this is what there always has been. And in fact, it isn't what it's always been. It is just what it is right now. And so our next generations coming through see this and they think this is the baseline of what we need to be getting back to. And it's not. It's, you know, there's old growth forests we want to be getting back to. And they've never had that experience of stepping inside an old growth forest to know, have the experience of being, have every sense be filled up. You know, a healthy old growth forest is complete thing that is like when you're in there, you're not lost. You're part of that. And you'll get God. You know, you're actually that person that's being seen and part of the whole thing. But most people have never had that experience. And even myself, I'm 55 now. I've not had the experience of what Victor Schellberger had the experience of, for example, with amazingly healthy waterways in the forests and being able to see those natural systems and how they work. So is why his series, for a lot of people go, oh, yeah, right. But they've never seen anything that like what he saw. So we've got to, we do have a responsibility of bringing forth that information so that others can connect with it. And it needs to be in bite-sized pieces. And so this is where people like myself who are just learning about things, I share about it because people can find their own truth in that. But if nobody says anything, they don't have any idea about it. And it, surely diversity of thought and experience adds to us, you know, to a more robust and resilient life.
Ecology, yes. You go into an old growth forest, you are in a cathedral of elders. And these old, old trees that have been here since, you know, prior to the birth of Christ. This makes people realize that, whew, they've been here a long time, day and night, and they're still growing. And the seasons go, and you know all the waxing and the waning of the moon, and these trees continue to grow, and they give life to so many insects and so much in the way of bird life, of bacteria, etc. We don't realize this, and I just want to say thank you for mentioning then that you want children to be able to realize our connection with these great beings.
Yes, and one of the ways is through sound, I think. You know, this is where I've sort of got led to, was that these connecting points, we can use them as ways to bring awareness to things. And you say cathedral, yeah, you step inside of a built cathedral, a man-made one, and you also get an amazing experience of resonance and belonging and grandeur. And so these things they're important too. The built environment is important, but I think we need to be considering it more like an old growth forest and how we create what we create and connect people with it.
Yes. You also talked about the burble, the ripple, the murmur, roar and hum of waterfalls.
Yes. Yeah, well, when you say all of those words, they evoke a sound, right? You can actually hear like murmur and burble. And then when you think of a healthy stream, then those are the kinds of sounds that you will hear. and they reflect off of the trees that might be hanging overhead. Or so there's a whole resonance inside of those words that a healthy system will have. When I am near a motorway and I hear the rushing of cars, I think, oh, it sounds a bit like a waterfall. But then I go, actually, there's none of that relief that you get from the murmur or the burble or the those things that actually activate other parts of our system harmonically, where like the stress levels of living near a highway must be huge. You kind of think that it doesn't let up. There's this sound, there's whoosh, 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 whoosh.
Yes, yeah.
It doesn't have the depth to it for a start. It's only just sort of one, you know, there's, it. Yeah, the soundscape of it, the soundscape is very monoculture, if you like.
Yes.
There's not the diversity to the soundscape that would give us health. And so that, again, with the built environment, I'm going, well, you know, we really need to be looking at how do we alter that sound such that we evolved with the burble and the murmur and all of those kinds of things. In fact, if you think about being in utero, you would have heard all of those sounds,
yes,
through your mother. And we conditioned, you know, we grew with that in utero. And it's a comforting sound. But when we've got the stressful sounds of highways and
aeroplanes,
emergency services vehicles, which are designed to make you turn around and notice, and then we're all getting habituated to them. We, you know, now we're ignoring things because it's like, oh, yeah, that's just a, that's an emergency services vehicle. You know, there's about 20 of them every hour. So, you know, so what? But it is leading to stress levels that we don't even realize, because we're ignoring things, but those sounds are still affecting us. They're coming in through. Sound waves are directly related. They directly translate into brain waves. They're one of those waves that actually it directly soaks into our system. Even if we're actively ignoring something, it's still there. And that's what I'm trying to encourage people to do, is go, okay, so what are you ignoring in the day? Just have a moment and have a listen.
Yeah, my thing.
And it's like, okay, well, we start to hear the birds and we think, you know, yep, okay, that's great. But then if you listen again and you go, oh, I was ignoring that. We're actively ignoring things. We do not realise that those things are affecting our health. And so we're not even bringing them up when it comes to planning, urban planning, or actually even insisting that our soundscape is healthy, that we have a right to live inside of a soundscape that is healthy. Not just, we talk a lot about how things look, but there's, how does it sound?
Well, where I work, there's 31 different birds, and I can tell 28 of them by their sound. And but I talk to any other, particularly young children coming up, And this, too, is a dropout, I think, in the education system, because there's such a huge pressure on teachers to follow the curriculum, which is so vast, that often they just don't have time. But to listen to all the sounds, and I can say, did you hear that grey warbler? Oh, look, I'll tell you what, did you hear that kotari? I mean, nobody's listening now because we've become blind to it, just like tree blindness. We walk past trees not even recognising that they're a tree. They're just like a cardboard cutout of something to fulfil our particular drama as we go through life. So there's lots and lots of need to really go about stilling ourselves, deep breathing, keeping our mind still.
Well, slowing down, allowing the sinuous waves to actually be there, you know. And then you look at it with, well, Victor Schellberger again, this is the way that water needs to move to become healthy. It needs to be in a spiral, in a helical kind of movement. And if we alter our stream beds and we have fast runoff, then we're getting sick water, right? And I think the same with human beings. We need to allow that time for the waves to, you know, for these things to move at the pace they need to move. In education, we're trying to push. Somebody said to me the other day, their three-year-old was being taught to read. And look, that's fine if that child, that's their self-expression. But when they're starting to push, it's like, oh, come on, guys, you know, let them be children, let them play, let them discover who they are. And when we moved to New Zealand, I started meeting some homeschooling families and thought, oh, well, let's give that a go. So I asked my children whether they'd like to, and they all said, yeah, we'll give it a go. Gosh, what I learnt through that, it means slowing down. It does mean not taking another wage because you're going to be around your children or being part-time in something. And so that in itself was the most amazing thing for my family. We didn't have to rush around in the morning to go to somebody, to a school where somebody had other values that we didn't have, for example. We chose to do this. It wasn't a reaction from anything that was wrong. It was just like, well, let's experience this. Let's try it. And what it provided, though, was for me a knowledge around an experience of how we all contribute. No matter what our age or experience level, there is something we contribute. And that came into our Sistema program because, you know, it's called, Māori name is Toi Ākorangi, and Ākor is about teaching learning. It's about that we can all learn from each other. So using Tuakanatena, which is where we have those kids who've just learnt recently, the skills, they come in and they actually make a difference to the children who are just learning. And so we've got this older brother, younger brother, older sister, younger sister situation going on where the ones who are just slightly more experienced are helping out the others. And so this scaffolding system is actually making a massive difference to reducing stress levels in the teaching environment, teaching and learning environment. But it's also giving the slightly more experienced ones an opportunity to contribute. And how often in our educational systems do we have that? I was doing a sum about, you know, looking at past and futures, and I thought, well, you've got one teacher who may be 40 years old. They've got 40 years of past and perhaps maybe 50 years of future. And I thought, they're in there with 30 kids, 8-year-olds, for example, who've got, anyway, I was just doing these sums about how many years of experience, just doesn't marry up. You've got a heck of a lot of kids whose futures rely on you as a teacher, and there's only one of you. And being a kaitiaki for their future, for all of those children, is massive stress. We need to alter how we structure our classrooms. They need to be more like an old-growth forest.
This is it. I mean, just 2 months ago, I walked around where Plato had his academy in Athens. And Harvard, of course, was all outdoors. And if you go to Delphi again, a lot of it, you have your temples, but it's surrounded by nature. And, I mean, the Greeks understood that, particularly the early Greeks. We need to get away from air-conditioned buildings and glass-tinted windows and have our kids barefoot from time to time to really experience the pulse of the Great Mother under their feet.
Beautiful. Really beautiful. I totally agree. And I was just been hearing that some of the schools are taking on more project-based learning, which just allows the children to explore inside of a topic what more. And I think this comes back to also the paradox of sophistication, is that really what we want our people to grow up with is a passion for learning. And children are born with that. If we don't stomp on it, they will be passionate about learning. And yet what we think is that we have to fill them with a whole lot of facts. I think what we're better off in doing is supporting what is it that they're wanting to learn and providing those opportunities for them. We also end up with people who specialise in areas that they really want to be in, and they'll be in jobs that they really want to be there because it means a lot to them, as opposed to, oh, what are you going to do when you grow up? Oh, well, and so much despondency out there because they think they have to do what is, you know, the jobs that are out there. The flexibility of community to actually have everyone be occupied in something that contributes. Everybody contributes something, and that's where we've also got to consider the unseen as well, because artists, for example, what they bring and how they translate what they see out in the world is a bridge, whether it's through music, visual arts, poetry, those things create the bridge. The artists are our bridge for people to understand and interpret many of the things that are out there, and they're also amazing problem solvers. So I think, you know, the wānanga I went to at Waipora Forest was actually, it was a wānanga, a gathering for with a combination of artists, with scientists and mātauranga Māori. So, and talking about what are the solutions for Cody dieback. So bringing those three areas of knowledge together was the most mind-blowing thing. Really cool. I'd love to see more of that happen.
Yes, I'm full on with you there. Wānanga for people is the Māori word for, I guess, school or learning. So, look, this is really, really interesting what you're saying there, because, you know, from my standpoint, every baby born into this realm is an energy bundle of exponential potential. And when they take their first breath, from then on, they are taking in information from this world. And if we have got them been born into love and aroha, then, and we're stimulating them in such a way as we're asking questions or allowing them to ask questions, and we give a good answer, a really, really good answer, then they will ask more questions.
Yeah, it's being supported in being curious.
Very much so.
Yeah, and I think also that the adult, a lot of people tend to think they have to have the answers or that there is a right or wrong. But when it comes down to diversity, right and wrong is actually very arid. There is, you know, there is a whole continuum of what the answer is. And it's like, well, okay, we maybe just need to be okay with not knowing the answer. That in itself is pretty full on. I'm kind of somebody who likes to know. But my journey at the moment is also being with the unknown and going, okay, so what's that look like and who can I be while with the unknown? You know, I don't know what the future holds. And being okay with that, not having to grasp or feel like I have to make myself feel bigger in any way, but just to be with, that's just how it is right now. And there's some amazing teachings out there that, you know, I've been accessing, and they've been very, very helpful.
Excellent, Fiona. Now, what would you like to share in these closing moments?
I think slow down and look at what, I'd like people to actually look at what are they ignoring right now, and to be brave and to go, actually, this thing that I'm ignoring it because, you know, there's a reason. Just find what the reason is. You don't have to analyze it or kind of make it wrong or anything like that. Just open yourself to those things and allow something to grow from that.
Yes, very good. Look, I was wanting to talk to you about rahui. I think rahui is a fantastic word for locking away fishing areas or locking away the bush for a while and allowing things to regenerate and revive. And I was also wanting to talk to you about we all human beings, we're human antennae really, and little kitties are, and I'm really keen on early childhood education. And yeah, so well, I want to say thank you. I'm going to ask you for one more minute. Is there anything else, too, that what you feel the institutions are doing that you like?
Yeah, well, I do. I do like what the local Girls High is doing in that they're incorporating this Tuakana Taina into their mainstream music education. And then now it's actually gone on to the chemistry lab and teachers are trying it out. And they think, oh, my goodness, that's amazing that those things you know, when there's been a survey of Māori students and how do you like learning this way? Well, they go, actually, this is part of our culture. And you kind of go, of course, Tuakana Taina is part of the culture. And one way that we could transform our educational systems is to actually bring that into our schools, and it will bring a level playing field where people really get to experience being heard, learning in a way that suits them, and being able to grow up healthy and whole while also being living in the modern world.
Excellent. This is wonderful. Have you a website?
For the organisation Sistema Whangarei, we do have a website. Yep, we've got a Facebook page and we also are open to donations. So there is something that our community provides for other parts of our community and it's free for participants. So it's always one of those things that a bit of paying it forward is always really lovely. From if we get people from the community paying it forward, that's awesome.
Paying it forward is one of the most wonderful things. And if you can, please, we just want your website?
It's www.sistemawhangarei.co.nz. It's www.sistemawhangarei.co.nz.
.co.nz. Okay, Fiona, thank you so much. Really good.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Tim. Great.
Okay. I really enjoyed this too.
Cool. Well, I hope it's been of use to you. They're great questions. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Now, you also mentioned a word that I can't quite understand, and it was at the Whangarei Girls High. What was their particular, the Māori word that they used?
Oh, tuakanatena.
Tuakanatena. Can I spell it, please?
T-U-A-K-A-N-A.
Yep.
Tena is T-E-I-N-A, but you will find it when you look up in the Māori dictionary. But it's basically older brother, younger brother, older sister, younger sister. So inside of Māori, te ao Māori, it's actually about that support from those who are close to you in your whānau. And it's where family should always be really the smallest unit of workability that we work with in our communities rather than an individual. This is where I think this has gone wrong. You just got to actually surround the family.
Yes.
Rather than the individual.
Yep, yep, very good. Mm-hmm. And I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been a really great experience and a really, really good. Yeah, I hope that it communicated. And yeah, I've got lots of ideas.
Yeah, well, you see, this is it. This is it. Okay, well, you see, I might even put that little piece that you just said in there somewhere in the, just at the end. So, got to go. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yep. That was Fiona Douglas from Whangarei in Northern New Zealand, just sharing a little bit of her journey whilst in this country, particularly the learning process, and that there are new ways that actually are very old, going all the way back to Indigenous cultures, to really be able to embrace an understanding of who you are in relationship to nature, the source from where we spring. The word wānanga. In the education system of New Zealand, a wānanga is a publicly owned tertiary institution that provides education in a Māori cultural context. And the New Zealand Educational Act in 1989 specifies that wānanga resemble mainstream universities in many ways, but expects them to be characterised by teaching and research that maintains, advances and disseminates knowledge and develops intellectual independence and assists the application of knowledge regarding āhuatanga, Māori tradition, according to tikanga Māori, Māori custom. Wānanga educational programs accredited through the New Zealand Qualifications Authority and through the Ministry of Education are partly governed by New Zealand's Tertiary Education Commission. Outside today's formal education system, wānanga offers certificates, diplomas and bachelor-level degrees, with some wānanga providing programs in specialised areas up to doctorate level. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it. Spread it. Radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University, and Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.